and out in D.C. right now is our very own Congressman Richard Hanna. Mr. Hanna, how are you today?
Doing well today. How are you doing?
It's rainy, and I've been sick for about, it seems like, forever. And there's this cold going around here that nobody can shake. It's terrible.
Well, it hasn't hit me. I'm feeling pretty good, thankfully.
Good. It's one of those colds that it drains you, your head gets all stuffy, your body hurts. So it's been a real struggle. Last weekend was our only weekend, it seems like, all year that we've had sunshine, and I couldn't go to the zoo or the park or anything. I had to stay in bed with a...
Well, upstate New York's famous for cloudy weather. It's the Great Lakes effect.
Yeah, the Great Lakes. It's the number one cloudiest area in the country.
I think it's actually number two, but one or two, it doesn't matter. Seattle's just a little worse.
Yeah. So, did you watch any of the basketball last night there, Congressman?
No. We were in conference till very late with Speaker Boehner and the entire Republican conference talking about the possibility of another short-term CR, continuing resolution.
Now, the budget is the big thing going on in the news right now. Where do you stand on it?
Well, there's a few things going on. One is the Paul Ryan's budget, which will be out today, which I haven't seen. We'll get a chance to review it. That's, of course, the long-term budget for next year. And of course, it's a budget that tries to cut $5 trillion over the next 10 years. The other part of the conversation is the continuing resolutions to fund the government for another week to avoid a shutdown, which would happen this weekend. So those are the two things. One will take quite a while to review Mr. Ryan's budget, and I'll learn more and study it over the next few days and weeks. But in the short run, we are wrestling with the notion of either passing or not passing another continuing resolution to fund the government for another week and give Speaker Boehner and the President and the rest of the House and the Senate an opportunity to get together, talk, and try to resolve some of their issues over the House proposal. People need to remember that... The Republican Party may be in the majority, but it still only controls one half of one third of the government, and everybody needs to and wants to have some input, and we're hoping to negotiate something that avoids the government shutdown. Certainly, it's nothing I'm in favor of.
So you say government shutdown. What does that entail?
I beg your pardon?
Now, what you say government shutdown.
Well,
what's that?
Hopefully, it wouldn't happen, but it's exactly what you say. Bills would not be paid. I think one of the things that is most upsetting is that armed services people would not be paid. It's not a sign of a functional government. It's nothing to be proud of. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't come to this. I'm going to work from my end and for the 24th to see to it that as much as we can, much input as we can have, we will towards not having that shutdown. But on the other hand, the Republican Party and Mr. Boehner, they're committed to some very, very serious cuts, some $61 billion between now and the end of the fiscal year, September. So that, that's what they're negotiating towards. And they're serious about it. This country's in dire financial straits. We are mortgaging our futures, our children's futures and their children's. And we have over a $14 trillion debt, and it's just their entitlement programs are out of control, and we have hundreds of government programs that they want to either cut or completely or pare back, and all those things are on the table, and they want to negotiate to that end to save money for the American public, and I'm on board for that. I'm not on board for some of the cuts they want to make, and in every area they want to cut, but. That's why I'm down here, to add my voice to the conversation, and I try to as often and as appropriately as I can.
Now, what's your major objection? What cut would you hate to see happen that they're proposing?
Oh, my goodness. There's 150 programs that they want to cut altogether. There's some 690 programs that they want to cut partially. So the list is is extremely long, so I wouldn't narrow it down to any one. And frankly, cutting any one program isn't going to, between now and September, is not going to make the differences we need to make. The long term, in the long run, it's the fiscal path we put ourselves on, how we deal with Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security and the big entitlement programs that have simply, when they were started, made perfect sense, and we were wealthier, and these programs are open-ended. You basically show up and sign on, and they've gotten to the point where, for example, in New York State, Medicare is over 50% of our county's budget, Oneida County, and I think it's close to that in the state. So these are things we need to look at. Everybody wants to provide for the elderly and people who are disadvantaged and do all the things that we do. We're a compassionate society. But on the other side of it, it is possible to tax yourself to a point where you actually destroy the very thing that's helping to pay for all the benefits that we enjoy. So, you know, it's about sustainability. It's about building programs that survive over time and that we can feel good about and feel as though we're meeting our responsibilities to our fellow man and our neighbors. Those are the kinds of conversations. It's not Democrats versus Republicans as much as people think. There is a very active conversation about the philosophy of how this country should look, how it should run itself, conduct itself, and what our priorities should be. And frankly, it's a great time to be in Congress because there are a great many people have very hard and fast opinions, but I think they're all well considered, and you know, we're here to come up with the best conclusions we can.
Now, you're on three committees.
Yeah, I'm on three great committees, and I was privileged to be put on a third, which I guess is unusual. I'm on the Small Business Committee, which is great for the district. I'm on transportation and infrastructure, and they made me vice chair of the largest committee within the Infrastructure and Transportation Committee, which is the Highway and Transit, and I've actually chaired a few meetings. They also, I'm on Education Workforce, and if you noticed, we had the Education and Workforce Committee. The chairman himself was in Utica. We had a great conference. It was a formal meeting, and we learned a lot. We invited a number of local officials and school representatives and school superintendents, and I think they had an opportunity to meet John Klein himself, who's the chairman for the country. He had a chance to listen to them. We also met in Cortland with John Micah and the New York State DOT new director, commissioner, Mrs. McDonald, Joan McDonald. So we had the DOT person for the United States, effectively, and the state all in the same room, and there were a lot of people there, and we got a chance to talk about a great many issues, most of them revolving around things that actually affect the 24th Congressional District. So I'm trying to make this job as big as I can. I'm trying to bring people up there and get a sense of what's going on in our community. And we have opened three new offices. People should know that. We're on 258 Genesee Street. We're in Auburn. We have a full-time office. And in Cortland, we have a full-time office. When I say full-time, I mean there's someone there all day who's an expert in meeting people's needs with things like Social Security, Medicare, whatever it is, the IRS issues, veterans issues. You know, they should just walk in or phone ahead, and we'll make an appointment. We are working every day to be as responsive and as quick in our response as we can be. And, of course, we get thousands of emails, and we're down to the point where we're responding in about 6 days, and on some things we're back to people the same day. So we've also opened three part-time offices, one in Norwich, one in Herkimer, and one in Oneonta.
Jeez, that's you guys are like the Starbucks of yeah. Congressional offices.
Well,
one on every
it's the people's business we're trying to do. You know, we have to be accessible, and I didn't take this job to waste my time. I wasn't looking for a place to work. I was looking for an opportunity to make a difference in the place that I care about.
Now, since you're the vice chairman of the Highways and Transit Subcommittee, the high-speed rail that's slated for the Central New York region, are you in favor of that project?
Well, it's more complicated than that, but if you want a short answer, I'll give you one. No, it doesn't make sense in upstate New York. What upstate New York needs is more reliable rail, more rail that right now the schedules are difficult. They're not always met very well, and it is slow. And the studies show that people are not as interested in high-speed rail as they are in actually reliable rail with schedules that fit their schedule, and that a little time distance doesn't matter nearly as much. But where I am interested in talking about high-speed rail from that committee's perspective is the Northeast Corridor, which is where it may make sense. There is no rail that I know of in the world that isn't heavily subsidized. We simply do not have the density of population to support it, and it becomes this very, very, very much the gift that eats, something that sounds good, looks good, everybody loved to have it, but at these times in our economy, it's simply not a practical thing to try to do. I think we need a conversation about, as a society, about building it between Washington, D.C., and New York City, and on to Boston, and maybe someday to Albany. But and even that, just from Washington to New York, is $117 billion. And they figure the income from that would only support about $50 billion of that. So these are big, big numbers, and we need to look at one another and say, is this where we want to invest? And, of course, we have the interstate highway system that's been very successful, and we all know that we're riding on rails today that were built by our forefathers, some of them over 100 years ago. So it is wise and prudent to invest in the future like that. But in these times, with our budget and all the other problems we have, frankly, building it across upstate New York is not something that I consider prudent at this time. It's easy to talk about, and it's fun to think about, and people do get excited, but we don't have the money, and I wasn't here to put money into things that don't sustain themselves.
Yeah, you know, it's this high-speed rail, I liken it to the Simpsons episode. I try to compare everything to the Simpsons in my life, and they had an episode where they wanted to reinvent the town of Springfield, and they had to get it going. They had to get some tourism in, and they had they built a monorail, which ran all the way across the city, but it ended up just being a piece of junk and ruined the town. And I think that's kind of what would happen with this high-speed rail. It sounds great in theory, but do we really need it, especially in these tough times?
Well, and the idea that it's going to help us economically, if you had the $10 or $11 billion that I've heard estimates to bring it across New York, would that be the place you'd spend it? I think that's part of the conversation.
Right, yeah.
And do we really need to run the risk of having something that taxes us more in New York State? We simply don't. New York State is losing businesses. It's losing its population. Young people look around for opportunity, and they move away. Energy costs are up. We have some of the highest sales taxes in the country. I can't add to that in good conscience from my job, and I don't think people sent me here to do that. So I understand that people are invested in this and they like the idea, but I have yet to have anybody tell me how they're going to pay for it. So if they come in with that, then we can talk some more. But I, you know, I'm here to be practical and be smart and be forward-thinking, not just jump onto things that sound interesting.
Now, how are we? The big thing around here is jobs. What are you doing from the Washington end to kind of help us up here?
Well, we're working on the Nano Center right now, which has kind of floundered for a while, and we are, along with local officials, trying to get the permit that has been jammed up by the Army Corps of Engineers, and we're seeing if we can't get that permit process alive and moving again, and I think we may have some luck. We're hopeful. Also, we have asked Mr. Ray Meyer, past senator, to work with us at Griffiths Park Business Park to bring businesses together and the Air Force and try to understand what it is that's there. Companies like AIS that need employees. We have out in the Auburn area, we've spoken to a company that wants to bring some jobs there and build pre-manufactured homes. And, you know, there are little places like that all over the district. that need a little help. And if anybody's listening to this, if there's something they think this federal office can do towards that end, that's appropriate. We're happy to do it, to reach out and use whatever authority or insights we might have to help people grow upstate New York. And, of course, one of the things I'm doing just generally is trying to vote for things and trying to be on committees that allow me to have some effect on small business in upstate New York. I met in Shenango County with their the Chamber of Commerce in Shenango County. Had a nice meeting with about 20 people, and I'm doing that throughout the district, meeting with Chambers of Commerce. We co-sponsored a bill to repeal the 1099 Act, which was so punitive to small businesses, part of the health care bill. So we're here to try to reduce the burden of business, the many, many layers. I think New York needs to understand that it was once the Empire State, but it has over time effectively killed the goose, and that there is a limit to what people will pay before they leave and before they decide to invest again. And I'm happy to see that the governor is engaged to try to cut back on the costs of doing business and living in upstate New York. And I'm here from my end doing the same thing. And, of course, I've spoken to the governor. And, you know, we really have squandered our prosperity in this country.
Yeah.
We have tried to do everything for everyone. And at the end of the day, it's small business and individual entrepreneurs and our own creative juices that kick us out of bed in the morning, make us go to work and be accountable and build our sense of self-dignity and respect and help us produce for ourselves. And it's great to have a society that wants to take care of everybody in every way, but right now something like nearly 50% of the population is a net recipient, and it's just not sustainable. We're on a very dangerous path, and these are going to be hard times, and there are hard decisions to be made. And it may not make me particularly electable, but I'm here to do what I think is right, and I'm reaching out to everybody in the district to ask them for their input, and to let them know that it's an open process, and we welcome everyone's voice, and that no one's marginalized. We had a telephone town hall meeting last night. We called about 40,000 people, wound up talking to close to 1,500 and for an hour and trying to explain to them what we're doing, answer some questions. And we put out our first piece of mailing about a week ago, and we've gotten hundreds of responses. So I'm just trying to make this office big for me, to keep it interesting and valuable, and for our community the same. So
excellent.
I invite people to engage us.
Excellent. Congressman Richard Hanna, thanks so much for joining us, and it sounds like you're busy. Keep up the good work.
Hey, thanks a lot. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Richard.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.